The Beat Podcast is brought to you by Nutritia and is designed for healthcare professionals only. This episode is specifically for healthcare professionals with an interest in inherited metabolic conditions. Asking the questions in this episode is Dr. James Nurse, a consultant paediatrician.
Hello, welcome to this metabolic podcast brought to you by Nutritia. I'm your host, James Nurse, a consultant paediatrician interested in inherited metabolic disease and medical education. Now, throughout this series, I'm hoping we can all learn a little bit more about the curious field of inherited metabolic diseases and the not-so-curious people who work within it. I'm joined by the legendary Professor Anita McDonald, a consultant paediatric dietitian with over 30 years of experience in inherited metabolic disease, and also a few former student of hers and a legend in the making, Georgie Wood. Anita and Georgie, thank you for joining me. Anita, I don't think it's an understatement to say that your name is synonymous with metabolic dietetics, both in the UK and around the world. So it's an absolute honour to have you on the podcast. And Georgie, I know you're relatively new to this world, but you're already, you know, got some impressive publications to your name. Georgie, do you recall when you first met Anita? And did you have any idea of kind of who she was at the time?
I do remember when I met her, and I did have a bit of an idea of her and her reputation, actually, because I'd first come across a few of her publications when I did a two-week placement in industry at a medical nutrition company, and I was with the research dietitians there, and they were looking at some clinical trial results, and I was writing a report on it, and I kept coming across this name again and again and again. And then when I actually decided to do my master's project in metabolic disorders, looking at low protein foods with Birmingham Children's Hospital, that's when I first actually met Anita. I think it was in January 2019. And I do remember kind of one of the first things she said at the meeting when we were discussing the project, and it was to myself and one of my peers as well, who was also doing a similar project. And it was something along the lines of, you will publish this research, or this research will be published. And I think we both felt slightly terrified and anxious, to be honest, about, you know, what we were going to be doing, but also incredibly excited about the journey that we were going to go on to, you know, eventually get this research published. And we did. So, yeah.
Oh, so it's always useful to have a sort of mentor right from the beginning. And Anita, I was looking you up before this, and you came to Birmingham in 1987. So I've been, that's 20 years or so after the first patient was started on a low protein diet for PKU. And did you start working in metabolic medicine straight away there?
Yeah, but I started almost 10 years before then, James. So I started working back in 1979, and a week after I qualified, a week after I got my exam results, and I went to work at a relatively small district general hospital with a children's hospital attached. I was by default quite lucky, because in those days there was like often one paediatric dietitian in a unit who was jack of all trades, did everything. And that lady went off sick for the year that I was there. And in the first week, in fact, 3 days into the job, the head dietitian came in with a list of blood results for the handful of PKU patients they had, and said, who's going to deal with these then? And being the confident person I was at that time, I said, yeah, I'll do it. And I started working literally with PKU straight away, and I continue to do so ever since. So in fact, well over 40 years is my history now with PKU. And in those days, of course, it was very, very different. Say it was a district general hospital with about 8 patients. Patients were only kept on diet up until the age of 8 years old, because in those days we thought the brain was fully developed. It was the right thing to do to stop the diet. And the general feeling with the paediatricians at the time that the diet was incredibly difficult. We had a handful of low protein foods, hardly any protein substitutes, and the diet was a huge, huge deal in those days. I mean, you know, history has told us it was the wrong thing to do to stop diet, but that's how we was learning at that moment in time.
I suppose the diet's still a huge deal these days, albeit, you know, and more manageable, but still very challenging.
Yeah.
So you literally answered the call to deal with PKU patients. I mean, was there any sort of degree of established metabolic service at that time?
What I was aware of was a service in London, and that was like the mecca of metabolic disease for us all. I had a very precious Dorothy Francis book. She was a very famous dietitian from Great Ormond Street, an Australian dietitian, but she wrote all the textbooks at the time, and I had this precious book from 1974 that contained all the knowledge about PKU and the metabolic disorders you could possibly wish to know. And I knew that book off by heart. But that was the only textbook we had. That was the big service. But I also knew of the service at Alderhay in Liverpool. That was pretty well established. And there were some small services in Sheffield and Bristol and Glasgow, but nothing like the reputation of the London, and of course there's a big service in Manchester, but still didn't have the reputation of Liverpool at the time, interestingly, or London.
And I mean, obviously you said when you were at Derby you were managing these PKU patients, but you're doing that as a general paediatric dietitian. How did you move yourself into being a metabolist through and through, or were you...
Right, okay. Well, I then moved sideways to, in those days, it was interesting because I wanted to be a metabolic dietitian from the word go, and but they didn't allow students to come out of training and become a metabolic dietitian. I actually applied for a job at Birmingham Children's Hospital back in 79, and they didn't even interview me at the time, and they didn't even look at the application form, just thought I was far too junior to have the audacity to think I could work at that hospital. So I had to go and gain a little bit more general experience. I went into become a full-time paediatric dietitian, and became that jack of all trades. I did that at St James's Hospital in Leeds. I was again very lucky in the fact, although it wasn't the metabolic unit in that area, we always had some unusual cases. So again, it built up my experience. I think one of the first cases was a case of beta-ketophialase deficiency, and again very privileged because we was working with the Sheffield biochemical team. So we was working with Rodney Pollitt, and we was working with Mike Bennett at the time, who's now well pledged in the United States, but we was working with these people. It's really quite exciting. That was one of my first metabolic paper was on beta-ketophialase deficiency. I remember in the early 1980s that we found MCAD for the first time, and dealing with a handful of MCAD patients, that was actually quite frightening because at the time we didn't really know how to treat the patients effectively. I couldn't believe as a dietitian all I had to do was give them a little bit of glucose polymer and everything would be all right. We dealt with things like galactosemia, but that was about it. But we did have some interesting cases, but I still wasn't that full-time metabolic dietitian. So in those days, we had to wait for somebody to retire. So I had to wait for the dietitian who did metabolic disease, who led the department in Birmingham, to basically hang up her boots. And I waited 7 years, a long time, and then hoped to goodness they would give me the job this time round, which I did, and the rest is absolute history. So then it took a long time to become a full-time dietitian and join that very exclusive club, but very glad I did.
It's hard to imagine Birmingham having turned you down in the first place, a bit like the label that didn't sign the Beatles. So, Georgie, I mean, it's rude to discuss a lady's age, but I think it's fair to say you're one or two generations behind Anita. I know you're in more in general dietetics at the moment, but obviously you've already sort of shown your skills in IMD. How has your route to this sort of differed from Anita's?
Yeah, so I mean, I guess similar to what Anita's saying is, you know, when you do qualify as a dietitian, you know, you can't really go directly into metabolic straight away. So it's similar in a way, but I suppose the lead up to that, kind of going back to my studying and things, is slightly different in how I got into dietetics. So I actually initially did a undergrad degree in sport and exercise science before then doing my master's in nutrition and dietetics at Birmingham City University. We actually only had one lecture on IMD at university, so just the one lecture, but I did think it seemed very interesting. And then, you know, interestingly, I mentioned that placement that I did in industry earlier on, and that was because our course is one of the first not to be funded by the NHS. Initially, a lot of the courses now aren't funded by the NHS. So we were able to do that 2-week placement in industry where I did a placement at a medical nutrition company. And that's where I kind of first, I suppose, were fully captivated, you know, by the area of IMD and found it fascinating. And it was off the back of that that I then chose to do the my master's project in that area with Anita and also Sharon at Birmingham Children's Hospital. And I just really, really enjoyed completing this, completely fascinated by the area and felt so supported by Anita and Sharon as well. And just allowed me to gain lots of experience in IMD and open many doors, really, in terms of getting experience in shadowing specialists, metabolic dietitians and other clinicians, able to attend conferences to present my research, which was a fantastic experience and a really great opportunity to network. And also through, I think, you know, a lot of people are aware, Anita kind of puts on events for the, you know, children with PKU, like the Christmas parties pre-COVID, which was great to be involved in that. And then ultimately publishing my research as well. So I suppose, as I said, I'm not clinically working in IMD as such, but I really enjoy doing all the research and kind of extra bits on the side in my spare time. Yeah, it's just something I've really enjoyed.
Well, I hope you'll find your way back to it. I think something that we always ask our guests is whether they chose to specialize in IMD or whether it chose them. I kind of feel like we know the answer to this, but
it's pretty obvious. I chose metabolic disease. And I knew from a student that's where I was going. And that was because I had a lecture from a paediatrician in Leeds who came and told us about PKU, and he really brought the subject alive, and he told us about case studies, and it really got me, really, you know, got me right in the middle of the heart, that this story of this, you know, condition with a terrible consequence that you could pick up on screening, that it was a special diet that could transform what would happen to these children. And it was great for me because it was dietetic led. We could do lots of fancy calculations. Of course, we had no computers in those days. We had to work out everything from scratch, everything longhand. And it would need a lot of monitoring, and dietitians would have a reasonable amount of autonomy. Of course, the doctors are important, but this is something we could get on with and get our teeth into. I knew at that stage that was the direction that I was going in, and I just had to wait for the right opportunities to come up.
Yeah. And yeah, I think, you know, I think, like you said, it's probably a bit obvious as well from what I said before, but I definitely chose IMD as well. And I can probably only really, you know, echo what Anita said there, really, in terms of, you know, for a dietitian, it really is an area where you can have a huge impact in supporting patients with the dietary management of their condition. And, you know, with that, I found, you know, actively found ways to get more exposure to it, finding, you know, shadowing opportunities. And I always just found it really inspiring to observe the specialist metabolic dietitians and supporting their patients with that dietary management of their condition.
And certainly it's an area where dietitians have an incredible amount of autonomy. I think the clinician in many clinics is very much sort of a spare part to the dietetic lead.
Yeah, definitely.
So we've heard on the podcast from Louise Robertson, Alex Pinto, Suzanne Ford, all of whom are dietitians with interest in other areas, so charity work and research, and we've heard about how they trained. I know there's a British Dietetic Association module on inherited metabolic disease, but for most dietitians, what exposure or understanding will they actually get of the field during training? I mean, Nita, you've mentioned your lecture on PKE. Was that all they talked about when you were training?
No, we had pretty good training in my days. I mean, again, dietetics was much smaller. There was much more clinical focus. It was after I qualified, the profession became much more diverse. So there was less time to put in the clinical aspects. I trained in Leeds, at Leeds Polytechnic, and that was a place known for its practical application rather than necessarily all the science. But we was very lucky because we was next door to Leeds General Infirmary. And there was a very good setup going on where the paediatricians came in to teach to us in the college, but equally we went down to Leeds General Infirmary and we had lots of case studies. So there's lots of interactions, and I can remember all of those stories. So the conditions were always brought to life, and we went through as many metabolic conditions that was known about at the time. But many of our projects was also around metabolic disease. I remember in my food science having to create a low-protein bread. Now, we are going back. You know, I started training back in 1974, so God, it's, you know, nearly 50 years. And but we only had a tin bread at the time. So I set about with various, you know, wheat starches and various fibres, and we had to, you know, not only did we have to create a bread, which was a mass failure, but we did come up with something. You know, we had to look at things under the microscope and stain things and look at every single aspect of it. So again, it was, you know, you was really ingrained into the topic. We had to learn about the conditions because we had exam questions on metabolic disease. I remember having a question on how to wean a baby with PKU and then how to compare it with a non-PKU child. But you don't see any of that now. So, in fact, I was really very pleased with the training that I had, and I would love to see more of that training put into the courses that are run today.
I suppose it does seem strange that there's, you know, that there's perhaps less training in there now. Yeah. And Georgie, I presume you trained in Birmingham. I don't actually know, but do you think that made a difference to the emphasis within your course being somewhere so close to a big centre?
Yes. So I did train in Birmingham, but no, to be honest, as Anita has just said, kind of how things possibly changed after she qualified. I mean, I qualified just over a year and a half ago, January 2020. We learned very little about paediatric dietetics and even less about metabolic diseases, really. You know, from what I remember, I think we only had that one lecture on metabolic diseases. And in terms of with our placements as well, there were very few placements within paediatrics. So they did have one at Birmingham Children's Hospital. But at the time when I was there, we were the first year of the course, so things may have changed. But they were only offering the initial A placement, which was just 1 week. I mean, I really wanted this placement, but unfortunately didn't get it. I know, you know, I knew that I wanted to work with children and had the interest in IMD. So when there was the opportunity to complete the master's project with Birmingham Children's Hospital and within this field, I automatically jumped at the chance. So I suppose having the link with Birmingham Children's Hospital for being able to complete your master's project kind of in collaboration with them, yes, in a sense, there's that emphasis there kind of within the course. But then when you look at the course content as a whole, possibly not. It kind of depends what you make of it yourself, really, and whether you want to. You could go through the whole course without really being involved in metabolic disorders and just kind of have that one lecture. Or if you wanted to go down the route of doing a project in metabolic disease, you know, with Birmingham Children's Hospital, then that option's there. So I think it depends on the person and what you want to get out of it and how much, you know, you want to learn about metabolic disease, really. So it varies, I guess, from person to person. And I was one that did want to. So, you know, I jumped at the chance to do my project in that area. And through that kind of, you know, as I said earlier, Anita opened a lot of other doors for me, and I continued to try and find more ways in which I could be involved in metabolic disorders.
And obviously, I mean, it's, although we're sort of saying Anita was taught more on metabolic disease than you are taught now, it's probably worth pointing out that I think dietetics has probably become exceptionally more complex than it was. And at the same time, IMD has become a much larger field. So it's hard to know how you fit those two together.
Yeah, definitely. And I think even like with my experience at university, we still had excellent training, and it was very, you know, like I said, it was very diverse, and we, you know, we had incredible specialist dietitians come in and lots of different lectures and teaching and cooking sessions, but just less so on metabolics, I suppose, really.
I mean, I've got ideas how it could get better, though.
I'm sure you have. I will say, I mean, something that we see with our medical school students is there's always a, well, why aren't you learning more about this? Or why are you learning more about that? And the students already think the course is massive, so it's very hard to know what to prioritise. And it's a difficult balancing act. And then we have a new disease turns up that only arrives, you know, when you're 2 years into your course, and it's not going to be in there. It's not going to be in the exams. This is currently happening, but, you know, less about, we're trying not to talk about that, the elephant in the room. Anita, you're a dietitian, a patient advocate, a researcher, and I suspect a hero to many in the PKU and wider IMD community. There was some talk about retirement, I seem to recall, but I haven't seen any sign that you're working any less hard or slowing down. What would you say have been the highlights around working with this particular group of patients and their families?
I think retirement has been a figment of my imagination, really. But I have stopped some of my work, and I've only retired to what I don't want to do anymore. And that's the way I take things. And of course, there's many things I still want to do. There's so many highlights, it's really untrue. And I think I was reminded of this only yesterday when I saw a 9-year-old with MSUD. And it was the first little girl in the country who'd been diagnosed by expanded newborn screening. And it was a pilot scheme at the time. But we was only 2 weeks into the screening program, and up came this little girl who was still quite sick, but not as sick as she would have been if we hadn't have had the screening program. And it's the excitement you get. I remember the first little girl that we cared for with a long chain fatty acid oxidation disorder. She was only 2 days old. She was a very sick little girl, but how much she taught us. At the time, we didn't know if she would survive. We didn't know if we was giving her the right dietary management. But as she survived and she got stronger, she taught us so much. I remember when she first went to school, she developed very dark urine. She developed muscle pain, and we realized she was doing a lot of exercise. And then we had to adapt to dietary management to cope with this. And again, as she got older and older, there was always new challenges. So it's always the new patients in life that teach you the most.
You know, they are incredible stories. They're an incredible group of patients to look after. Georgie, within this field, Anita is obviously a role model, but she's got very big shoes to fill. She's doing so many things, it must seem really impossible to keep up. As a relatively junior dietitian, how do you prioritize your time?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, Anita's incredible. In terms of prioritising my own time as a fairly new paediatric dietitian, it definitely involves making lots of lists, breaking down much larger tasks into smaller, more manageable chunks, and setting achievable deadlines and ticking things off once I've completed them. And that definitely spurs me on, you know, to complete the next task as well. And I think that definitely applies to, you know, my research as well, which I do outside of work. Also, I think in line with this as well, in terms of being more time efficient, I think it's really important to have, you know, supervisors and a team that are very supportive. Being new to paediatric dietetics and also within my research as well with having the team at Birmingham Children's Hospital, I definitely have this. And I think within this, communication is vital. It's crucial that I'm never afraid to ask questions if I don't, you know something or I'm not sure on certain things. Obviously, it's important that I do research things myself and show that I've tried to find a solution or implement a plan or whatever that is I'm doing. But then, you know, I always, you know, if I'm unsure on something, I will discuss that with someone more senior and really try and utilize their expertise as well. At work, that might be, you know, making sure that I'm practicing safely and therefore, you know, knowing and understanding my own limitations. And then with my research, I do want to make sure I'm undertaking it in the right manner or the right way. And this can mean checking things with Anita or Sharon or Alex. Obviously, if I did a lot of things, you know, on my own that I'd not done before without communicating to any of them, I could just end up doing something in a more long-winded, you know, less time efficient way. And that wouldn't be very, you know, helpful in the long run. Whereas if I had just clarified or checked something with, you know, Anita and the rest of the team, they've got much more experience in that field and they might suggest a more effective approach, which, you know, could save time in the long run. And I think that's really important. I guess also with my research and IMD, you know, I'm so passionate and interested about the area that I always find time to fit it in as well.
I think there are some people who feel that you should leave your work at the door sometimes, which I know that you two both seem incapable of doing. So I think all your patients can be very grateful for your commitment that you show to it. Anita, alongside your support for patients and families, you're very keen to ensure the next generation of dietitians are adequately trained, and you've formed this incredible team around you at Birmingham. We've met Alex, of course, already. How do you manage that?
Yeah. Well, I'm supposed to have stopped man management, but every time I do, I seem to acquire more people. It's an interesting one. It's actually quite a harder task than people think is when you're looking after people, because you've got to take care of them. But firstly, I think I surround myself by good people, a lot of equally minded people, very enthusiastic. They've got to have a good work ethic to come and work with me, or else they wouldn't be able to stand it. And people who want to make a difference, make a change, that's really quite important. But for me, it's giving people a good grounding, a good training. When I have a new metabolic dietitian, regardless of the background and where they come from, whether they're experienced or not, I will go through a training program. Whereby we will go through all the different conditions, we take people on home visits around the wards, we do case studies, maybe do some of the things that perhaps should have been done a year or so before, but we know that they've heard it from ourselves and the dietitians I work with. So people have got a good foundation. That's absolutely important. And but when people actually start doing clinical practice, you know, everybody's enthusiastic to start with, but you can start getting a little bit bored and demotivated. And that's where I would come in with some of my projects. And I always think it's important when you are a clinician, because we get so bogged down with all the patient work day after day after day, that you give people a bit of space. They've got something that they can do for themselves, something that is theirs that they can develop. And this is where the projects come in. We make time, we find time for them. And this is where I would support the individuals, and some people need more help than others, of course. You know, we can't start a project and never finish it. That's the rule. It's got to be finished. If the patients have been good enough to give us data, we have to finish a project. And I will just support people, helping, giving them a showcase. They need some kudos for their work. We need to get them on a public platform to share it. And generally, dietitians who've done some research, they've done some project work, they make much better dietitians. They're the dietitians who will come along and question you medics. They will come along. They're really good critical thinkers. They will think about the practice. And then when they've reached that high level, I bring them back down again. And this is where my leadership skills come in, and I show them that no job is too big or too little. And it may be somebody like me, maybe on the platform somewhere giving some speech, but equally people will see me at the end of the day at an event, you know, cleaning the tables and sweeping the floor. So I say, look, I can do this. Whoever you are, I expect you to do it as well. So that's the kind of things I do with the man management. And I think sometimes my own team wish I would give up and go away, but I am still here.
So Georgie, you've obviously studied and learned under Anita, both as a student as a sort of qualified dietitian. She says she's being supportive. Is she really a taskmaster? What's she like as a teacher?
Oh, no. I mean, Anita's amazing. I don't think it's been different learning from her as a student to now being qualified dietitian at all. I think with Anita, no matter how much or how little experience you have, or whether you're qualified or you're not, she always has time for you and will always have time to answer your questions. And every day is a learning day when you're working with her. And I think, you know, we can hear today as well, but also when I'm having meetings with Anita, whether that, you know, that's on a video call or something, if she's talking about IMD and dietetics, you know, the passion for the area and her patients really does shine through. I think that's very, you know, evident and clear. And whenever I finish a meeting with her, I'm definitely left feeling incredibly empowered and motivated to continue working hard in order to achieve a publication and also ultimately help to try and improve the lives of our patients and as well.
And do you think you've been able to teach Anita anything?
That's a very tricky one. I don't know about that. You might have to ask Anita that one. With my research, I suppose, you know, I found out some kind of new and relevant information on low protein foods. That's where most of my research has been on. But I also think I may have just confirmed some of the things that she'd already suspected, perhaps.
Georgie, you have taught me things. You have taught me things. And I remember the presentation that Georgie was given to the BIMDG, and she was a student, not qualified. It was in front of the entire BIMGG, a huge, huge audience for a student. And remember, I wasn't sure that you would be ready to give that presentation. And you convinced me, you had to convince me that you was, and you did. And you taught me that I always should believe in people. And I will now sit back and say, yeah, just go for it, try it. And so she has taught me things to just thoroughly believe in people's own ability.
No, I mean, I was there, and she certainly didn't come across as a student. But then I also see what time you tweet at night when you finish drilling them on their presentation skills.
That goes without saying. That's part and parcel of it. If you can get through a practice session with me, you can go in front of any audience.
Yeah, now, practice. I think is the key.
Well, it certainly makes you perfect. And I mean, obviously, these projects that your students do, you often share details around those on social media, or you're recruiting for things. And so it's great that those students are getting this experience of IMD. But I think for many students and newly qualified dietitians, these metabolic patients can seem slightly ethereal. They may never come across one until suddenly they do. What advice would you give them if they wanted to learn more, or even find out if this might be for them?
Yeah, it's difficult, I think, for students, because I think people will have no idea about what the topic is about. It's certainly, I think, if students do hear the one lecture on the course and it really fires them to want to learn more, it is worth contacting the local metabolic centre just to see if you can come along for a day or two, just to shadow them, to come on the wards, to come on visits, to meet the patients. I would ask if they could volunteer to come on events. I've had many students come and help on events. They absolutely love it. And also the children love the students, and they're a lot more trendy than the likes of me, and know better things than I know about the latest gizmos. So, you know, the students are always incredibly helpful. Sometimes we will take the patients into Birmingham University College to do the cooking, and we have the students come in and help us out. And again, they get to know the patients, they get to know a little bit about low protein cooking. They see it's fun, they see that the children are going well. I would encourage the students to listen and watch all the courses that the various companies put on. You know, we should have student members for the BIMDG. We should have free student members so that they can see what we're doing and see some of the information. But I would take the initiative, speak to the local people in the local metabolic centre. We will provide training. We'll provide them with some help.
Yeah, I think I can only really you know, agree with what Anita said here, and maybe just add a few things. I think, for example, listening to podcasts as well, like this one, and kind of this little mini metabolic series, is a really, really useful way of kind of finding more about metabolics and the rest of the MDT and how a dietitian fits into that. I'm kind of still fairly new to the area, and I found it incredibly, you know, informative and useful listening to the previous episodes. Attending conferences as well, and any webinars that are on as well in the area, particularly when conferences are face to face, I think it's a great way to network and gain, you know, more even more shadowing opportunities as well through networking and speaking to specialist metabolic dietitians in the field. And also, if some of the conferences where they do have patients attending as well, it's a great opportunity to speak to patients and get a bit of an understanding from their point of view too. You know, it's really important to understand, you know, the patient and their side of things. That's vital. And being active on social media, I think is really, really key. Particularly, you know, as a student, having a professional account is really helpful, and seeing, you know, what's out there and following all the key kind of specialists within the field. And I suppose the main thing that opened, you know, further doors for me and made me even more interested in metabolic disorders was doing my student project in that field. So, and like Anita said, you know, Birmingham Children's Hospital are so supportive, and her team are really, really helpful.
I think it's interesting the way you contrast that, and Anita saying the students are more trendy than she is. I'm pretty sure she's the only person I know with a TikTok account. But we could always get you two to do a floss off. I always ask our guests what they might do differently if they were starting out again. But given that we've got the two of you today and you're at very different stages of your careers, although I'm not quite sure when Anita's is ever going to end. But I wonder, Anita, what advice would you give Georgie as she embarks on the journey that you started, what we said, 40 years ago?
Yeah. If I was you, Georgie, in the position that you're in, I would get a good grounding in paediatrics in general. And I think for metabolic disease in particular, I would really encapsulate things like gastroenterology training, enteral nutrition training in liver disease, renal disease, because all those skills will help you at some point in metabolic disease. But get that groundwork. That will give you a lot of confidence when you start working in metabolic disease. You will get a metabolic disease job without question. And when you do go into that job, I wouldn't try, you know, there's hundreds of metabolic conditions, and I wouldn't go down the route of just becoming specialist in one or two areas. I would try and go across the board, gain good knowledge. And I think the reason is that the minute you start working in one area, you develop a comfort zone. You don't want to move out of that area. You can't afford to in metabolic disease. You need to, again, be that jack of all trades and be able to flip from one condition to another. So certainly move around, even in the world of metabolic disease. keep updated, attend the Module 4 training course. The SSIM are now expanding the number of courses that they run for dietitians. I would certainly join the BIMDG and the BIMDG dietitians group. We have a lot of communication, emails that we share. We have a lot of meetings. We will systematically discuss the dietetic treatment of different conditions within Britain. But you learn so much and find yourself a good mentor, somebody you trust, somebody you can talk to, and somebody who you can bounce off ideas. And I think that is important. And trust yourself and trust your own ability. I think that's, challenge those doctors. They don't know everything. And I think that is something that you've got to remember and not to feel frightened to do so. You've read the latest references. They probably haven't read them for a long time. So go in there.
I mean, Georgie, obviously you are literally just starting out on your professional career, but you've been in the sort of dietetic field from studies and things. Would you do anything different?
No, I don't think so, to be honest. I know, obviously, very in my short career so far, I suppose, and kind of looking back at my studies and training, you know, I've had the privilege of working with Anita, and she's introduced me to lots of incredible people within the world of IMD and supported me in publishing my research and presenting my findings. And I wouldn't change that for the world, really. And I'm in a position now where I'm working as a paediatric dietitian in a rotational post, which I thoroughly enjoy. And I'm really excited to see where my career will take me. And I'll definitely take on board all the advice that Anita has mentioned and just look forward to continuing to build that general paediatric knowledge whilst working on my IMD research outside of work as well.
I wonder what you think about the sort of what we've seen, what are the biggest changes in the last 10 years and what can we look forward to over the next decade?
For me, the expansion of newborn screening has been very important. It's been brilliant to be able to be involved in the dietary management early on when patients are well with isovaleric acidemia, starting dietary treatment with patients with homocystinuria when the tiny babies and the MSUD, as we discussed before. One of the things that's really important to me, and absolutely everybody else, is seeing our patients survive and develop and, you know, grow into beautiful adults. But of course, as we see people grow, we're seeing more comorbidities with some of these conditions, and this brings in new challenges. The expansion of the metabolic team, that has been really quite incredible. Seeing more patients in the UK go to a centre and seeing, you know, we've gone from the single dietitian, the single nurse, to the single doctor, to having big teams of all these people. We've got new ways of communicating, seeing the networking developing across the country. That is really good to see. Seeing technology develop and seeing the way that it's helping patients with the different conditions, although sometimes I could do to be on that a little bit more than I am. So those are some of the things that I've seen.
And what do you anticipate coming in the next decade?
Well, there's lots I would love to see. I think the adult world will change incredibly. I think the adult world will become super specialist. We're going to see the development of the elderly specialty in its own right for people over 60s, 70s. That's going to become a new skill. I think the maternity services in the adult world will build and become much more specialised because they take so much of the adult time. Jim, what I would really love to see develop is the introduction of an IMD national dietetic training post, somebody who could link in with all the universities and go around the different centres and train the new dietitians, because there isn't time to do that, somebody to give them confidence. I'm far too old to do it now, but I would love to see the development of such a training course. I want to see the dietitians take on all the prescriptions. I would love to change the way that our families get hold of the clinical foods, take it out of the GP hands, and have instant deliveries of the low protein products. Expansion not only of national networking, but of worldwide networking, that's so important. And again, something boring, but I think we need many more patient registries. We really need to collect much more systematically the outcome of so much of our work with patients, and even for maternal care, looking at maternal PKU. We need to know what the babies of children with PKU are like, maternal PKU, 20 years later, not just a couple of years later. So we need much more of that developing.
And I mean, and Georgie, I know your kind of experience in this field is obviously much less than Anita's. Is there anything you're particularly looking forward to in the next 10 years that you hope will change the care of these patients?
Yeah, so I mean, it's really interesting just listen to hear Anita talk about all of that, really. But I think for me, in terms of the next 10 years, I suppose a couple of things I hope that will change from what I've read in the literature and through conducting my own research. Again, I'm only really echoing what Anita said here, to be honest, but that need for dietitians to become responsible for prescribing clinical foods and you know, a good review of the system by which these products are accessed as well. I think that's really, really important to make them much more accessible. And I think that will really help. And hopefully, I suppose as well, just looking at kind of the low protein products and foods themselves, hopefully that the range of those foods will expand as well with labelling and the quality of these products improved. I think that's really important, particularly as our patients are, you know, progressing and we are going to need elderly care. We need to try and support long-term healthy eating patterns as well.
I mean, I think there is so much more that we could talk about. I suspect you both probably have a lot more that you could say, and maybe we could all meet again another time and find out more about what's been going on, some of the projects that you've been going, you've got in the works. Anita and Georgie, thank you both for your time today and for speaking with me.
Thank you, James.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. Until next time, goodbye.
To keep up to date with future episodes of the Beat podcast from Nutritia, make sure you subscribe on whichever platform you listen to your podcasts on. For more updates on the show, as well as lots of other educational content from Nutritia, sign up to our newsletter at www.nutritia.co.uk. We'll be right back.